From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. This is indeed The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I am your friendly neighbourhood Leon, joined as I am always by my friendly neighbourhood Mark.
Yes.
And my friendly-ish neighbourhood Garth.
Get stuffed.
For yet another episode of 2019. It is the 10th of January, episode 246. And last week we went over our top 10s of 2018, an episode that's gone down an absolute roaring hit. Much good positive feedback from you all on that episode. Thank you very much. So much so that we're pretty much going to milk it and do a bit more of it tonight.
Absolutely.
Except we're going to go a little bit off topic, I'm afraid, for everyone out there that's a hardcore board gamer and cares about no other form of entertainment, that we're going to just regale you with some of the other things we enjoyed last year, like the video games, your TVs, your movies, your so on and so forth. But of course, we've also got room right at the top of the show for a bit of board gaming fun.
Absolutely, but I might talk to you about some nice breakfast that I had last year.
Oh,
I might not, though, because I typically just have Weet-Bix and skim milk.
Wow.
Oh, well, look,
if that's not a hook, I don't know what is.
Speaking of breakfast, I'm going to throw in a factoid. I believe that's the thing that the kids do these days.
Yep.
And do you know that the photo we posted in Bowrie to Williamsburg in Melbourne, where we had breakfast on the way to BorderCon, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yes.
That photo has over 50,000 views.
That's because you look at it every single day nonstop.
So it hasn't been 50,000 days since 2 BorderCons ago.
Hang on, wasn't it a PAX photo? Because isn't my wife in it as well? And
she is.
And don't I look horrendous in that photo?
Is it 2 years ago PAX?
Well, she didn't come to BorderCon with us as far as I know, unless you two snuck her in.
No, you're right, it is PAX 2 years ago.
And as for you looking horrendous, Leon,
yep,
we'll talk about that off air.
Good to see some things have changed in 2 years, isn't it?
Anyway, look, The Dice Men Cometh is Australia's number one podcast radio show all about board games, and tonight, not all about board games, because as Leon said, we're going to throw in some video games, we might throw in some TV, we'll throw in my breakfast. Leon, have you got anything else you want to talk about apart from those particular topics?
I've even got some comic books, I've even got some music, I've got lots of different... I might even talk to you for about 20 seconds about professional wrestling.
Wow.
Well, I've even got a little vignette about tabletop games on Kickstarter.
Well, look, we should get through and start actually educating and informing and inspiring and being all professional and stuff.
Give or take.
But before we do that, we better throw to a song and then we'll come back and talk about a game that I have played that you guys haven't lately.
This is the Dice Wife, Sarah. And when I want to listen to a podcast that sounds like at least one of them is sexy, I listen to The Dice Men Cometh.
That was Franz Ferdinand. You're the reason I'm leaving here with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, episode 246. And we're here to talk about some of the other top and bottom things of 2018 that we have sort of discovered along the way. But before we do, Garth, we're going to reach back in time to that time when, I don't know if Leon was alive, but it was when all things great happened. Oh. Maybe that's why he wasn't alive. It was the 1980s when all the best movies were made, Garth.
Yeah. All the best movies.
I feel so convinced.
All right, so Big Trouble in Little China. Uh-huh. Is a 1986 American fantasy martial arts film directed by John Carpenter.
Mm. Big name there.
Starring Kurt Russell, Kim Cattrall, Dennis Dunn, James Hong. And it's all about James Burton, Jack Burton even.
There you go.
Who helps his friend Wang Chai, or Wang Chi, rescue Wang's green-eyed fiancée from bandits in San Francisco's Chinatown. They then do some kung fu fighting, people die, weird things happen, and you fight David Lopan, who is the biggest, baddest thing. And what does this have to do with anything in terms of tabletop gaming? Well,
can I take a stab at it?
Yes.
Did they make a tabletop game based around it?
They did. And when I say they, I mean everything Epic Games. And when I say they, I mean designer Christopher Batalis, Boris Polonsky, and Jim Sammartino.
Those guys.
Have seemed to do, collectively,
yes,
not much else.
Ah, a
little bit, but not too much.
So a passion project, perhaps.
Possibly. So this is the 2,264th ranked game on BGG. It is a fully cooperative, miniature-fest, move-things-around-a-board, which I'm happy to say is double-sided. Try and lay some smackdown, try and find some things, try and complete some quests, and then die horribly.
Oh, fun.
Well, at least that was our experience, because about 2 minutes before going on air, when we were going, well, Garth, you'll lead this, and then Mark, you'll do the other things. And I went, yeah, cool. I can't remember which one of you guys played this with me because it was a little while ago, and both of you said, I thought it was the other one.
Yes.
So I'm the only one of us who's played this now.
Yeah, a bit of a snafu there.
But the good thing is this game is really easy to explain because, according to the rule book and my memory, you will flip a card, which is a big trouble card, and that'll tell you what bad things happen because this double-sided board, one side has a top-down map of Little Chinatown or Chinatown or Little China, and on the other side, it's a different map all entirely as you're about to walk into David Lopan's lair and try and do some kung fu fighting. So it's very much a game in two acts. The first one is we're all trying to complete main quests and side quests, which will buff up all of your characters so that hopefully they are strong enough to be able to fight the big bads at the end.
Well, Kurt Russell was pretty buff in that film.
He was pretty buff, and I do look at this video cover, because I guess it was VHS and possibly Laserdisc at the end, and I have spent a lifetime thinking that it's a big blood splatter on his singlet top. I didn't realise it was not a blood splatter.
No, it is not.
But that's just me. I should wear glasses.
You should.
So, look, this game, which does play four, and I would suggest you play four because that is exactly what you want in a fully co-op game. You will flip over one of these cards at the very start of the game once everyone has selected one of their characters. And this is where you've got the classic characters from the movie, none of whom I can really mention because I really didn't watch the movie. Except
it's got Kim Cattrall.
Kim Cattrall,
way before she was famous in
all the sex that she'd done.
That show about the city and what the sex they have.
Yes.
Way before that, because she was like the cougary type older person in this show. In this thing, she's a young hot thing.
So what I was going to say is that because we played this game at Trent's, and by we I mean myself and not you two guys, Leon and Mark and anyone else listening, was that Trent set this game up, and as he was about to set the sort of scene and teach us the game, pressed play, and we then had Big Trouble in Little China playing on the TV while we were playing Big Trouble in Little China, while we were trying to learn it. So we had conversation going on the TV, Trent trying to explain it, several people going, what?
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I actually watched the movie, but the point is,
but then 10 minutes into the film, watching that going, what the hell just happened?
Exactly. Something about a Pork Chop Express.
Yes.
So you'll flip the Big Trouble card. And the way this works is it'll set the scene. It'll tell you which big bads are going to be out and where they're going to be. It'll also move the token that's on the Big Trouble track, which is important because there are two main tracks on side A of this board. You've got the Big Trouble track and you've got the Audacity track. And if the token gets to the main central spot, which is David Lopan's lair, from either of those sides, that signals an immediate flipping over to the other side of the board, and that's where some more kung fu fighting will happen.
Righto.
So you flip over, you'll go, wow, I can't believe that card just moved the Big Trouble token 3 spaces because it might only be 12 or 15 spaces long, and it's like, oh my God, this game's going to kill us. Spawn some bad guys, which could be guardians, which are big Cthulhu-y blobby-looking things, or they could be just fighters with machine guns or with swords or any of the kind of, I don't know, just weapons of choice in Big Trouble in Little China. You'll then decide as a collective which player should go first. So it's not a round the table, Leon, you're going to be first every time and then it'll go to Mark and then it'll go to Garth. It is you decide, well, your character is in the right spot to do blah, 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 so you should go first.
It is a nice mechanic in some co-op games.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're going to go that far and just say choose whoever, you may as well choose complete turn order. And I don't think that player order going round and round and clockwise, if you're going to go for it, just go completely.
Oh, so it was you pick who goes first and then go around. Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yep, so that's fine. So, and on your turn, you're going to do a couple of things. Everyone collectively at the start of the hero's turn will roll three dice. And you've all got this beautiful little player board. Now, you've got three main, I guess, stats that each character has. And what you're going to do is place one of your dice in each of the three stats. Now, it doesn't actually matter what die you place in what stat, because each die allows you to do every possible action. The reason you want to do it is because where you place each die in each of the three stats can be important. And the reason it can be important is because if you place a die in the right spot, it'll allow you to do an epic move.
Ooh, epic move is epic.
Exactly.
Mm, so lots of custom dice as well.
Yeah. You've got your body actions, you've got your mind actions, and your spirit actions. And the way your turn will start is you'll place your first die into either body or mind or spirit on this really nice and well laid out player board. And that then allows you to either move or pick up or fight or do any of the available actions. But some of these little actions on your player board have a yellow ring around them. And if you place a die in a space that has a yellow ring around it, it allows you to do an epic action, which, for example, instead of moving two spaces, might allow you to do three, or instead of picking up something, might allow you to pick up two things. It's epic.
Oh.
But because you've always got to place your die from the left-hand-most square, you're never necessarily going to get all those epic actions out. I think that is nice and fun and a little bit cool because you've also got, as you say, Mark, those really unique custom dice.
Yeah.
And they all have different faces on them, which they mean you have to place them in the mind or the body or the spirit section because they've got a mind symbol, which is a scroll signifying reading stuff.
Wisdom, knowledge, perhaps.
Yeah, you've got spirit, which is the old yin and yang, and then you've got the body, which is a finger and a hand attached to it, so you place it there.
I'm glad you ended with that because I was like, just a finger, you say? Well, slightly odd, but sure.
So you do your actions. Once everyone's gone around the table, then the bad guys move, and the bad guys are moved according to rules in the game, which is they can only ever move within the same region. They will always move towards the hero that is nearest. If there's some other things happen, they won't do anything. But the point is they will fight you and they will stuff you up big time because they move as clumps and then more bad guys will come out. And really that's what you're going to be doing for the first two turns is running from and killing bad guys while more importantly trying to complete quests. Because as I said, there are two types of quests. You've got your main quests, which there is one per player. And at the start of the game, each player will choose which of the main quests they want to add to the deck. That deck gets shuffled up and two of them are always revealed at once. And the main quests will be a step-by-step process where, first of all, the lead character, say Jack Burton, has to go to position XYZ and do a search action which triggers the quest. From then on, the quest will move to another location in Chinatown where someone has to go there and roll some dice and get some successes or roll some dice and fight some baddies and so on and so on and so on. The quests become increasingly difficult.
Yep.
That's the word.
And varied. But if you succeed, everyone becomes more awesome.
Always a class.
Or epic.
No. More audacious.
Ooh.
Because the token on the audacity track moves up, which means that every player on their player board gets extra chi, and we all know what extra chi means.
Wow.
Means you get to upgrade your character.
Oh, lovely. Nice.
Everyone starts on zero chi, but as each player gets to 10, you might get a new card that you can add to your little arsenal, which is a unique ability. Or if you've already got a unique ability, you can flip that card to its epic unique ability and trigger something a little bit more special. So you're going to move around, you're going to fight things, you're going to die, you're going to hopefully survive. Or you're going to end up like me, in that you're going to be stuck in a Chinese restaurant, unable to go out through the only exit because there are about 15 miniatures outside. All of those want to kill you. Mm. Now, that's a bad thing because if I try to run through that particular square, I take one damage for each bad guy that I'm trying to avoid.
So I walk in there. I go, I'm running away. I take 15 damage. Do you know how many health I have?
Probably less not than 15.
10.
Yeah.
So I die. But dying's not always a bad thing. All it means is that you draw a hell card.
Not bad. You just draw a hell card.
Because there are several different layers of hell. And that means, look, it just means that you've got a permanent debuff to your character for the whole game, which allows you to not do certain things. And we're still talking about part A of this game.
Right.
But if this is a co-op game and you're drawing all these miniatures to you, doesn't that mean your party colleagues are away having a fine time doing other stuff and you're taking one for the team?
Well, I'm not taking one for the team. I'm taking multiple for the
15
team.
15 for the team, perhaps?
And the thing is, what's the first lesson in a fully cooperative game?
Oh, don't split the party.
Correct. Now, this game encourages you to split the party because you've always got two active quests from two different characters. So character A wants to go and satisfy that quest. Character B wants to go to the other end of the board and satisfy that quest. But then once they've ticked off the box and started the quest chain, any player can do that. So whoever's closest to the next part might go, well, I'll stuff that challenge, I'll go to the other one. They've also got side quests, so you might just happen to be in the right part of the board and a side quest magically appears. So you search for a token and the token says, ha-ha, it's cursed, lose 4 life.
Right. That doesn't sound fun.
So everyone will die in this game.
Okay.
But it is fun.
But dying doesn't take you out. You just get going with respawn. That negative point. Yeah.
Do you want to know where you respawn?
Right at the start?
No. Oh. Exactly in the same square that you died.
Oh. Oh.
And you know what happens if you respawn when there's 15 bad guys in the same square that you just died?
They lay the smack on you again?
Bad things.
Yeah, bad things.
Ah.
More hell cards. Anyway, this game is a bit rough and ready.
Okay. Right.
We managed to finally get to enough, not audacity points, but we managed to get this big trouble track to go down to its final thing, not by choice, just because it had to happen eventually. We set up the other side of the board, which is David Lopan's lair, and he's the big bad.
Mm-hmm.
That has 3 sections in it, which, depending on how well you've been able to complete the main quests on the other side, determines how hard or easy the second half of the game was.
Okay.
Now, there's 4 main quests because we were playing with 4 players. Do you want to know how many we completed?
None.
A little bit more than that.
1.
Yes. Which meant we had a slightly less horrible experience.
Okay.
Now, we all died horribly.
In Lopan's lair.
In Lopan's lair. None of us got beyond the starting third of the board because the return, the opposite board is 3 sections. And we all went, ouch, this is a brutal, brutal, brutal game.
Well, there's the question, I guess. Is it a brutal game or are you all idiots?
Or is there a but? I feel a but coming on.
Well, there is a but coming on. To answer your question, Mark, it's brutal. Yes, we're all idiots. Yep. But the biggest idiot of all is Trent.
Because for change.
Because Trent, who taught us the game, forgot to read rules that said we each start with an extra ability than we did, which would have really altered the game.
So you reset it and started?
Well, no, because it was already midnight. Oh. But what it did make everyone say is, I'll play that again straight away and we'll play it right.
Okay,
because the game itself is actually really quite fun. Yeah. If you like your stupid Ameritrass, no holes barred, I'm going to try and kill some things. If I get killed, I just respawn anyway, it doesn't matter. It is good fun.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good fun because it was so hard because we didn't have the abilities to go on to continue the second part of the game. So my advice, fellow dice people, is to do as many of the main quests as you can.
Read stuff the side beforehand. Quests.
That should be a given. Don't bother with the side quests. Do the main quest. Increase your chi. Do all the stuff. And you will have potentially a really fun time.
Now, I see that this had a deluxe edition, which took the play count, I think, from 4 to 6. Did Trent have the deluxe edition or the standard edition?
I think he's got the standard edition because it was only playing 4.
Okay.
I don't think playing 6 would add any benefit to this at all. I think it was tough enough at 4. There was a crap load of miniatures out on the board and immediately reminded me of something like Zombicide, where just miniatures go blah and just vomit out onto the board. So I don't think it necessarily needs a higher player count. The player boards themselves are wonderful, and rolling all the customised dice is great. What is also really cool is that there's this fate track and fate counter on there, which is six dice that at the start of a very sort of phase, you roll them, and they go on to a board that's very similar to the Raja, the Ganges player
board. Yeah, like
boards.
The Kali player board. That's what I thought when I saw it. I thought, oh, a car. No, it can't be Kali because that's like the wrong...
It's the wrong Asia.
Yeah.
Anywho, on your turn, you can choose to sort of invoke some fate and take one of those dice. Now, that is almost always going to be a good thing, but it comes with a consequence. So once you've been able to finalise the result, which might be I'm attacking some bad guys or I'm searching for a thing or I want to try and progress my quest, you then roll some dice and depending on the result, either nothing will happen, which is perfect, or bad things will happen. The bad things get progressively worse because say you've taken the very first of six fate dice. The bad thing might be, and I believe it is, every other player by you loses three health. So you've immediately annoyed every other player. The second thing might be lose five chi. Now, you're trying to get to 10 chi to be able to upgrade your character. Losing five of that is massive. And that continues to get progressively worse up until the sixth die, which is you immediately die if you invoke the fate and then roll the wrong dice face at the end of that. But the good thing is dying is not permanent. You just have to take a hell card, which do stack and become increasingly really bloody annoying. But it might have helped you along the way.
So it sounds like there's a fair bit of randomness in this game.
Well, look, Mark, there is dice rolling.
Yeah.
And every time you roll dice, it must be like a 1 in 6 chance that you'll get the face that you want because they're all D6s.
But I guess the question is, everyone knows, particularly from my top 10 last week, I love a story-driven, narrative-driven game, and often I'm prepared to let something slide if the game tells a really enthralling story. Does this game tell an enthralling story, Gar?
Well, yes, because it has a quest book. Ooh. So every time you progress through your own individual quest, there'll be a paragraph of blah, 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 blah. You fight people for blah, blah, blah. Or you find a blah, blah, blah for blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah happens.
Sounds so fun.
And depending on your success or failure of each particular step along the way on your quest, the story will go blah, blah, blah.
So it's got different outcomes?
Or blah, blah, blah. Yes.
Okay.
So it actually does have a bit of a storyline. I would strongly suggest everyone watches the movie, not because it's good, but because it gives you context.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to be a truck driver on a Pork Chop Express, don't they?
Even Dolph Lundgren, I hear.
No. Yes. Wrong movie.
Yes. Although extremely similar in quality, I must say.
So although it was a commercial flop at the box office, John Carpenter's movie is very much a cult status thing now.
Yeah.
This game, I don't believe, set the world on fire in any way, shape or form from a gaming point of view.
No.
But with the right group of people, with enough drinks under your belt and someone who reads the rules properly and makes sure it works, I reckon you'll have a lot of fun with this because each turn moves quickly. It's a bit of fun. There's always time for some smash-em-up, kill some things, not die, do die, doesn't really matter. And the miniatures look really cool.
Yeah, I was going to say the production values look really nice on this.
So it's a bit more closer to Zombicide and, say, a Descent than to, say, a Fireteam Zero.
Yes.
Which was fine, but just stupid hard and ruined everyone's time and experience.
Yeah, across the board, once we realised the next morning that someone hadn't bought it right and hadn't given us the necessary arsenal in order to be able to defeat the things, everyone went, let's just do that again.
Good.
And of course that hasn't happened.
So you had fun.
So that's a good sign. Yeah. I will happily play this again as long as we have a chance.
It's kind of like Ghost Stories. Yes, it's really, really hard, but it's a really solid game and you enjoy it.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter that it's that hard.
So there you go. That's Big Trouble in Little China. It is certainly not going to win a Kennerspiel, but who the hell knows these days? It very well might. And I think we should come back and talk about some hits and misses from 2018. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Itch Radio 99.3 FM. Just for now.
This is David from Grail Games saying the Dice Men Cometh have only paid me $5 to say they're the best Aussie podcast ever.
We'll make it 10.
They're the second best. No, the best.
99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh, and that was Imogen Heap, what a bloody surprise, with a song called Just For Now, because as far as I know, she's the only person we play on this show?
No, that's what? Kate Miller-Heidke.
Oh, we've had plenty of Heap on there as well, I'm sure.
I
have not played an Imogen Heap track for probably
a solid two weeks.
2 years on this show, guys.
Anywho, Marky boy, what are we talking about now? Well, we let Garth ramble on enough.
We did. Now we're going to continue on from last week. So last week we talked about our top 10 games that we played in 2018. Now, some of them are 2018 release games, some of them were 2017.
And what a varied list, gentlemen, yes. I must say. Probably our most varied list.
Yeah.
Arguably since we did this the very first
time. Did anyone bother to count the number of games on our three top tens? I know there weren't 30, but I reckon there would have been...
There was 20-something, that's
yeah,
probably sure.
But maybe what I
did notice at the end, and I sent it to you guys, I can't remember exactly, but my number 10 was Garth's number one. Mark's number 10 was my number one.
Yeah.
And then I paid no attention to Cartwheel story.
Well, Mark's number one was Fog of Love, which was the most unsurprising guess all year, bar Where Words, which was your choice.
Well, let's talk let's talk about some other games that were new to us in 2018. Let's talk about the biggest duds.
Oh, okay.
The biggest disappointments, the biggest surprises.
Yep.
Maybe some sleeper hits. I have quite a list of all those things, but who would like to start with... Well, actually, I'm going to start.
Well,
because...
I don't know why you bloody asked, to be honest.
That's right. Let's talk about and where you draw the line between a dud and a disappointment, I'm not sure. But for me, I've got a couple of games here that I was really excited to play, and then when I played them, and with two of them, of the four I've got, I bought them... So excited about them.
So what category are you starting with?
So let's start with disappointments.
So disappointment
as opposed to duds.
Game that you were excited about that really failed.
So I'm going to start with, I'm a huge H.P. Lovecraft Cthulhu fan. I'm in a Cthulhu role-playing game at the moment.
Oh, really? Cool.
You know, I love that genre. I can't get enough. And when it was announced... that there was a game called Mountains of Madness.
Oh, God, that.
Based on that H.P. Lovecraft story of exploring in the Antarctic. You come across this ancient civilization and then all hell breaks loose. I won't spoil the story. I was like, oh, this is going to be so exciting. Then I saw it was created by, I think Rob Daviau was the designer. That's right. Thank you, Garth. Art by Miguel Coimbra. And it even had a little plane miniature.
Sounds great, doesn't it?
Hey,
it does.
They're setting me up right there, aren't they?
Elevator pitch is very good.
Now, I immediately jumped on Twitter and said, can't wait to get this game. I don't know when it's out. And good friend of ours, Neil from Polymorph Games, says, hey, I've got it in stock. I'll ship it to you right now. And I was like, oh, okay, better buy it. So I bought it, got it shipped to me, got it within a matter of days, played it. Two or three or four times because I really wanted it to be good.
Yeah, it wasn't, was it?
No, it was a good activity. It's not a good game at all, but it's a fun activity at least for once, I would say.
And so you're playing cards to meet the challenges and then you have other cards which give you negative effects that slowly get... bigger and bigger and bigger, which are representing you
going
slowly going
insane.
Mad in the Antarctic.
Which is the game. Those cards are the game. Yeah, yeah. You take them out of them, it's not even a game.
Yeah, really. and it is much more of a party game than I thought it would be, that's for sure.
Mm.
Look, let's just beat the chase. The little plane miniature, that was awesome.
Yeah, good plane miniature.
That was the highlight of the game for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't move it on. Shortly after, very much in the Leon vein.
So, look, the thing is with this game is it's mixing two very different things, which is an actual game, which is you start at a place and try and get to a place while being successful.
Yeah.
And then throwing in the most random of player-limiting abilities, such as you can't talk anymore.
No.
Or you can only talk by sitting down on the floor and not on the seat, or you can't look people in the eye, or all of these silly, silly things that just make the game secondary.
Yeah. But what it does is that it kind of screws with your expectation, which is the thing you could argue is not the designer's fault. You could argue is the player's fault. Mm. However, you put this game in front of somebody, you look, oh, I can see the theme, I can see the board in front of me. This looks like a game, only to discover, as I said, it's more of an activity.
Yeah,
of a
yeah.
Very similar to a game, I don't know if we've talked about it much on the show, but was it Food Truck Champions?
Yep.
Which is kind of an implementation of Glory to Rome.
Yes.
That game, it looks, the art is lovely. It looks like a kid's game almost, but then it's insanely complicated.
If you're which not, is great.
If you don't know Glory to Rome well. And that's what I mean. That game infuriated me because of that. Because you put it down in the pub and I thought, this looks good and I like the theme. And then I was like, why is this one of the most complicated games I've played all year?
Yep.
So, yeah, so expectation for this game, it did not help the situation. Okay.
Well, I certainly added it to my dud list.
Okay. I forgot
we played it. I didn't add it to my disappointment because I think when you've got Rob Dovio's name attached to a game, to have it be really disappointing and more a novelty than an actual game is just a dud.
Mm.
So I've got it on a slightly different category to you.
Okay. Let me go one more.
Oh, good.
With a... this was a huge Kickstarter.
Yep.
Some of the most amazing acrylically plasticky pink meeples that I've ever seen. I even filmed an unboxing video. I was so excited about this game. I even put the theme music from the movie that it is based on.
And I must say, I am very much like the lead characters in this. I can also not do push-ups.
Dinosaur Island. Now, I know a lot of people have talked about this game, but for me, I played it a couple of times because I didn't want to rest on that one play that just was, played it with you, Leon, and your lovely wife, Sarah, and my partner, Sarah, at the pub and was left very flat.
Also, the first time he's ever got those two names right in the same sentence, by the way. That deserves a round of applause for anybody
it's
out
tricky.
There.
It's tricky.
Leon and Sarah.
Yeah, and then played it again with our friends Oren and Georgie and had this same experience. And it just left me flat where I was expecting the excitement that the, let's not talk about the second, but the first Jurassic Park movie and the more earlier series of movies left me, and I was very much left with a management game and a sort of not an engine building game, even just a I don't even know how to describe it.
I can't even remember. Have you ended up talking about this in any review capacity?
No, because I was so disappointed that I basically sold it. Now, mind you, I had the deluxe edition with the metal coins and everything. And I was so heartbroken, I had to move it on and forget it ever existed.
Because I do know we need to be quite quick about this, but I think I remember you saying how disappointed you were that possibly Sarah, your wife, won while just increasing her herd of brontosauruses or brachiosauruses or whatever boring dinosaurs there were.
Yeah, pretty much.
While Mark was going for these T-Rexes and ultrasauruses and blah, 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 blah.
But it wasn't worth it.
I mean, Leon, so you really played that game. Do you have any memories of it? Park
I think I liked it more than you, but even I was just like, yeah, it's fine. It's another game that we played and, but yeah. Anyway, should I go now? One that I'm assuming is on both of your list would be a game that is very high on BGG, so it must just be us, and that's Decrypto.
Yes.
Decrypto, I thought this game's up my alley 100%, and I thought it was garbage. I understand the game. I get the mechanics. I understand the appeal. And in a certain group that play these type of games often and have little in-jokes with each other, I can see it. But as a general game, sorry, Codenames exists. So this game just has no place in anything for me.
Yeah, look, the problem with this game is that party games are meant to be fun.
Yes.
And I believe they should be easy to teach.
Mm.
And this game is arguably fun but not easy to teach. Every single person I have played this with, which is now probably 15 or 20 different players, haven't figured it out until we've actually gone through a round.
And even still then,
the explanation of it.
Yeah.
It's only when you do, okay, we're going to do a whole, just a playthrough of a round, which only takes 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but you read the rules and you're going to get one or two people that go,
Huh? What? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's completely fair enough. So I agree with you. Again, it was on my duds list. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to like it. I like the idea of it. But I certainly don't think it deserves to be, I believe...
It's like the fourth
most highly rated party game. Mm.
And Werewolves is probably not even in the top 50, which is ridiculous.
All right, well, look, I better throw another dud into the list, which people have heard me talk about.
Hang on, a dud or a disappointment?
Well, look, I had the crypto on my dud
list. It's a bit hard to draw.
No, well, look,
let's not split hairs.
Look, let me go disappointment then. I'll quickly do a couple. First of all, Jump Drive, which was basically sold as Race for the Galaxy Lite.
Oh, God, that was
It's really not. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Reef, which is just poor.
I've got it on here.
There you go.
It's a bit boring. I've got that. I should probably play that again to see if I want to keep it or not.
All right. I'll keep going because I know we've got not much time. Yeah. Viral. Boring.
Oh, yeah.
You're each playing diseases wanting to take over a human person. Think, nah. FNOS, this is probably the one or two out of my list that is just a complete disappointment.
Yeah. I really wanted to like FNOS, and I still kind of in some ways do. Like, I probably would play it again, but it
just... I don't mind it.
I think it looks bad. I don't think it...
Oh, that's definitely true.
...is enjoyable. I don't get the little plastic tokens. What's that got to do with all these wonderful different races?
It's your inish, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm going to throw in my disappointing... Professor Evil in the Citadel of Time.
Yeah, I was going to add that, and I couldn't be bothered because it was just so blah.
Yeah, yep, exactly so blah. I'm going to throw in Blackout Hong Kong here.
Ooh.
Now, Blackout Hong Kong was arguably one of the hits of Essen.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm going to throw it out there is because I haven't played it, but I've sat down and been taught it, and everyone at the table, of which there were maximum player counts, so four or five, went, nah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And our friend Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, she's really not a fan of this at all.
No,
either. So we've not heard the best about this.
So, look, it looks... playing with the componentry and looking at it, it just doesn't look too good. And having not played it, but having been sold on the elevator pitch and everyone collectively going, nah, I don't hold high hopes.
Okay.
I've only got one or two left, but Mark, do you want to...
Yeah, well, look, I was going to go back to a game I did talk about when we talked about the Kennerspiel.
Yep.
Heaven and Ale,
yes.
Where for me, you know, as a home brewer, as a man steeped in the mythology and the science of brewing...
And the religion of it.
And you bring together water and hops and wheat or barley and yeast. You gather those things, you never bring them together, and so they remain just four or five different score tracks, and that's what that game is. So disappointing... Look, the other one I want to mention, I'm sure you won't agree with me, Garth, Adrenaline.
Yes,
I don't
agree with you.
The first-person shooter game that we played a little while ago, for me, it just didn't live up to the hype.
Well, you should play it quickly. so, two more for my list. Montana, which was arguably one of my opposite of great experiences at BorderCon. It was just boring and offered nothing new. And then the big one, which I'm pretty sure I'll have two people agree with is Altiplano.
I was literally sitting here thinking, I played no games at BorderCon that I disliked. I was thinking, I played lots of really good games last year.
Yeah.
And then halfway through that sentence, I went, Altiplano. Yep.
So look, the thing is, we are very much in the minority
around
Altiplano. And I know we do operate a bit of as a hive mind every so often, but every single person at the table didn't enjoy their experience of Altiplano. I'm happy to give it another go.
Hell of an alpaca first player marker, though.
There we go.
It's one of the best of them I've seen.
Well, similarly, where we seem to be in contravention to the rest of the world... The Mind.
Oh, I had that, but I've got that on my dud.
Okay.
It's not a disappointment.
Well,
it is just...
I'm spanning the bridge between duds and disappointments here. I had The Mind. Look, it's obviously a lot older than 2018, but we did play it last year. Mistfall, which I thought was going to be epic.
Yep, no.
A couple that we haven't played, but just doing some research... These have landed so flatly. Discover Lands Unknown, that unique game by Fantasy Flight Games.
I so want to love that idea of that game because it's after Keyforge, this unique
sort of mechanism where every single game is different.
And the other one in a similar vein, Great Western Trail, where it seems to have fallen flat with people, that sandbox Western game where you can be a cowboy, a bad guy, a gambler.
You don't mean Great Western Trail.
No, you're talking about Western Legends.
You're
talking Western Legends.
Yeah, no, not Great
Western
Trail.
Which I've heard nothing but good things about.
Really? No, no, I'm talking about Western Legends.
Yeah. I've heard nothing but good things about Western
really?
Legends.
Really? Oh, we've done different research. One for me that I was personally disappointed in, another Kickstarter I backed, Pulp Detective, which was billed as a two-player game, was really a one-player game with a two-player variant, and I moved it on very quickly.
I almost backed that myself, and then I saw you selling it. Before you'd even spoke to us about it, I was like, oh, that must be horrendous.
All right, well, let me go unless Leon, you've
got... No, I've got no more.
All right, so who goes there? Who Goes There was a real... I put it in my dud category, but I mean, I guess most of all, it was really disappointing. You're reliving the thing.
It was so close. So close to being a really good game.
It looks fantastic or amazeballs, as the youth of today would say, but the game just doesn't have that tension. Without having played it, Fallout...
Yeah,
which hasn't at all got any real good traction. I've got to say Spirit Island, but anyone who listened to my SN Unplugged break will know that Spirit Island really was not a game that I gelled with, and again, flies in the face of a whole bunch of a lot more. Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
Oh.
And then, Mark, I'm going to beat you to it, Whistle Stop. Which I had some fun with, but it wasn't nearly.
Wasteland Express, that's probably, I think that's got to be my biggest disappointment of the year because, I bought it. We had our friend Aiden paint it, and I thought, this is me in a nutshell. It's Mad Max the board game, and it looks amazing. Yeah. And it's by the same dude that did...
Jonathan Gilmore!
Yeah, exactly. And then it was just like, this is incredibly mediocre.
So apart from our top tens, is there anything good that we haven't mentioned? So
for me, quickly...
What I would call my sleeper hit. We played this game in a pub in Melbourne on the way to BorderCon with our friend Rowan from Brave New Board Games. It is The Game, The Game. Now, I got a copy via our friend Ella from Ella Loves Board Game of the new, not that there's any language on it, but the new American English version where it's bright colours. Sarah, my partner, and I have played this probably 15 times.
But that's because you like seeing who can count to 100 best.
It's very patience-y.
It is.
A two-player patience, which you can play in 10 or 15 minutes. It's a great little filly game. We've taken it to the pub and played it on a table. We've just had a lot of fun with it, and I've been really surprised. It's sort of grown on me.
Well, that's good. It's a very simple game. I would play that 100 times as opposed to The Mind, which I would not play again.
It's a game we easily dismissed, and then we actually played it and went, I see now. Yeah. This is worth it.
It's the joys of a simple idea done well. So for me, a couple of sleeper hits. Paper Tales, which was a nice little tableau-building game where you take the Seven Wonders mechanic, you're sort of fighting your opponents.
Yeah.
That's left and right, so that was good. I'm going to include War Chest in this, which is a two or four-player abstract war game. I think that was a really good implementation. Australia by Martin Wallace.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think when someone sells the pitch of a train game with Cthulhu, unless you're Martin Wallace, you probably can't get away with it, but that is good. And then I have thrown in Gizmos here, but I'm not too sure whether it belongs on the sleeper hit, because I reckon it might just be a hit.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And I've then got a couple more surprises, so whether or not we've got time for those, we're going to have a song first.
Let's have a quick break, and we'll come back and wrap up from there.
Hello, everybody. Your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. We'll get you back to the action in just a few seconds, but first, a few bits of information for you. If you're a new listener to the show, or even an old listener, and you haven't left us a review on iTunes, we would really, really appreciate it. We have grown in leaps and bounds over the last few years, and a lot of the reason is because of those iTunes reviews. Because if you throw up 5 stars on there, people all around the world, which we have a fair few international listeners now outside of Australia, have found the podcast because of that. Second, do you know that we have a Patreon? Yes, if you've been listening to the Dice Men for the 5 years or more of goodness we've been pumping free into your ears, if you want to give a little bit back, we're not asking anybody out there to go giving us $20, $30 a month. That's ridiculous. What I would suggest personally is give us $1, $2, $3 a month. I do that myself with about a dozen or so podcasts. I don't even know it's gone from my bank account, but I can tell you that they sure know about it. Every cent we get, We do not spend at the pub as much as we might sound like we do. We spend it on going to conventions all around Australia and hopefully very soon internationally as well. And finally, if you wanted to get your hand on some Dice Men merchandise, jump over to redbubble.com, put in Dice Men in the search, and you'll be able to buy t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, etc., whatever you want. So, if you'd like to support us, we really appreciate it. We do love you all. You are all our friends and family, and hopefully you will be for many years to come. Now, back to the action.
Well, there you go. That was Green Day with Geek. Stink Breath, you with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Mark, you and I have a couple of surprises from the year that we were very excited about. So I'm going to throw out the first surprise. I was really impressed with Everdell. I know it made Leon or someone, Leon's your list. Yes. Mm-hmm. I just want to say I'm so happy that that game was a game and not just a game that had beautiful art.
Yep.
And a irrelevant, although very beautiful, tree.
Well, for me, Quacks of Quedlinburg, when I heard about this game, I was sort of like, what? And then it was all in German, and it was a bag builder, and at that stage I hadn't had any experience with a bag builder. And then I played Alto Plano, and my only experience with a bag builder was, oh, my God, how bad
is that? It was a bad builder, not a bag builder.
I loved Quacks of Quedlinburg, and as I said, it made your top 10. It almost made mine. The other one that did make my top 10, which I picked up secondhand very cheaply, expecting nothing of, was First Martian's Adventures on the Red Planet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Quacks was very highly on my top 10 list and, again, was probably my surprise of the year because I certainly didn't expect it. So, for me, another one was Thanos Rising. I thought that game was certainly not great, but it was a huge step forward to what I expected.
Yep.
Well, I guess mine probably would be a game that was Garth number one and my number 10, which was Raja of the Ganges because... Yep. We had heard the name of it before going to BorderCon, got there thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind trying to play this,
yeah.
And seeing 20 copies of it there thinking, okay, this is clearly bigger than what we expected, and then seeing it played all over the con all weekend, and then we actually played it and went, oh, it's good. Yeah. I can see why. Oh, and for a game that we'd literally spoken 20 seconds about before getting to that con.
That's right. So another one for me was the Expanse board game.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a really good game that is in a dire need of a second edition and a bit of work to make it look good because the fundamentals of that game are sound.
I was very
play it two players.
Yeah, I was very disappointed when our friend Aiden decided to sell it because I think... it had an expansion that came out that takes it up a bit. And you're right, with a makeover, it's another Twilight Struggle. But with four players, I think it could be really
great.
And
so much quicker. All right. Yeah, what have you got for surprises, Mark? Anything else?
No.
All right, I'm going to throw two out there. One is Kama Sutra.
Ooh.
And I'm not saying it's a surprise for a good or a bad reason. I'm just putting it out there because it's bloody weird because it's designed by Bruno Feduti.
Yes.
And it is
and
a party game.
Really interesting art.
Where teams of two try and recreate positions in the Kama Sutra with the intention of popping the balloon that you put between yourselves and no doubt have a unpleasant amount of gyrating included. It just is really weird. And then for me, another surprise, and I'm not decided yet on good or bad, is Keyforge. So I'm putting it in the same curiosity basket. Yep. We've certainly had some fun with it. I'm curious to see how it goes, and I think as a surprise, the fact that every single deck is unique is surprising.
Yeah, the fact that it exists is the biggest surprise in the board gaming world.
Similar
this
to Discover Lands Unknown.
Yeah. Now, lads, we didn't talk about this in the break, but we have got, well, particularly, I guess, Leon and I, we've got a lot to talk about with... movies, TV, video games. I know Leon's even got some songs. And what I'd like to propose right here live on air is let's bring those back next week because we've got about 2 minutes to talk.
Happy
so what to. I will throw into the mix here is just a little vignette, a little snippet of information that I discovered about tabletop games on Kickstarter. Now, let me tell you a couple little things just to wrap up. Tabletop games have almost raised... now, the figures aren't out for the end of 2018 yet because the accountants are still working away in the background. But in the first 6 months of 2018, tabletop games raised almost $80 million in half a year. Now, let me put that in perspective. In 2011, which is sort of the very birth of Kickstarter, Tabletop games amounted to $1.8 million.
Not bad.
2 years later, in 2013, tabletop games accounted for $53 million. So a bit of a jump there.
Slightly.
2015, another 2 years later, tabletop games accounted for $84 million. In 2017, they had jumped up to $136.5 million.
Well, that's when Leon got his pay rise.
That's right. And remember I just mentioned, in the first half of 2018, it's almost $80 million, which is way more than half of 136. So I'd be really interested to see what happens when the full year figures comes out. Now, tabletop games have raised in that first 6 months of 2018 more money than any other category of Kickstarter.
Yep.
And they also represent 30% of all the money raised on Kickstarter. Now, in 2017, tabletop games represented 23% of all the money on Kickstarter. So they've ramped up, and the second half of the year is usually bigger. Now, there weren't a lot of huge projects in the second half of 2018, so maybe it'll buck the trend. And when you look at that top 10 list that I think we talked about a few weeks back, there were a lot of those games were from 2017. Maybe that's something we could talk about next week when we come back and revisit the films, the TV, the music, the video games of 2018. Is
yep.
What was 2018 like as a year in gaming? I don't know. What do you think?
Quite an interesting topic, actually.
But it's big dollars.
Yeah, and I know there's been news from CMON Games, particularly about revenue changes that they have had, because they obviously used to be able to put out any old minis fest, put Eric M. Lang's on names on there, and just watch the money roll in.
Well,
but I think when you said, what was their game? Was it Fate? Or
yes, Fate was one of theirs.
That was quite a dud. There was no millions of dollars of backers. It was only hundreds of thousands of dollars of backers. And I think there's certainly a bit to be said for maybe oversaturation of the same type of game with just a little bit
possibly, but then that game Mark backed recently made $8 million and looked kind of similar to that Fate game, if you ask me. Well, but you just can't tell.
I think that's one of the interesting things. If you juxtapose, say, CMON and Awakened Realms, where CMON, it's minigame, 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 minigame. If you look at Awakened Realms with This War of Mine, Lords of Hellas, Nemesis, Tainted Grail, I think they had Edge, Dawnfall was another one of theirs, but they're not all just minigames.
Apart
from This War of Mine, just named four very big minigames.
They have minis in them, but I think the secret is, so, and with Tainted Grail, you know, it's a storytelling game, it's very much the Seventh Continent map building. I think that's the thing, is they're bringing out different styles of games with minis.
Okay. I think it sounds like next week's show will be the Great Dice Man Debate.
Perhaps. Probably not, though.
Okay, well, surprisingly, we've run out of time again. It's only a few seconds to go before they're going to kick us out of the Edge Radio Studios, but we're going to take a breath and say, see you all next week, and thank you so much for listening.
Bye. Yucky duck.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.